Please be seated now for the sermon of Mr. Steve Buchanan.
Good morning again. Okay. Well, I hope that you had a fulfilling first part of the spring holy day season. And that your days of unleavened bread and the Passover, of course, was a profitable time. Did you learn anything new? Did you learn anything new about yourself? Did you reinforce some lessons? Anything you want to talk about besides Mr. Walden? Now that the days of unleavened bread are over, we can proceed on to the next phase of the spring holy day season, or at least begin to prepare for it. We're now pointing to the day of Pentecost, a very important time. The entire time in the spring is filled with spiritual meaning, and I hope that the next few weeks of your preparation for the last of the spring holy days is a learning experience, even as this last season was for all of us. With this first Sabbath after the days of unleavened bread, I'd like to focus on the concept of first fruits. As the theme of the holy days are centered around the harvest seasons, the early spring harvest season and then the later spring harvest season. You're familiar with the type that is shown that in keeping the holy days, we picture the harvest plan of God's salvation. That's what God is doing. He's building his family. He's calling people to his family. He does it initially in the springtime, so to speak. It's a type where there's a smaller harvest. And then the later harvest is pictured by the fall holy day seasons. Most of you get that. If you've been around for a long time, then you certainly get that. So today, what I'd like to do is go through an explanation of the technical, the physical, and the spiritual application of first fruits. The technical, physical, spiritual aspect of first fruits, in fact, that is the title as well. The technical, physical, and spiritual application of first fruits. In my former career, some of you know what that was, I was called upon, as was Mr. Walden and now my son Stephen for quite a number of years. We can all recognize this. I'll try to explain it and not get lost in the weeds, so to speak. But we were all called upon at times to explain in our very narrow range in which we were dealing with in one therapeutic area, usually, sometimes very complex scientific medical issues. Yeah, that's right. We're the guys that took up the time in the waiting room, and we got in to see your doctor before you did. And you were, what is that guy doing? He's dressed all up in these fancy clothes, and he's either taking in a lunch or whatever, and he's taking time away that I should spend with my doctor. Yep. Guilty as charged. We did it. But we were trained very well in a very narrow area of medicine, whereas your doctor, most of the time your family doctor, is trained in a wide area and has to develop a wide range of expertise. But our job, most of the time we accomplished that. Our job was to become experts in the area in which we were supposed to detail, a physician. Now, like you, sometimes the physician just wants the basic stuff. Just give me the overview. You've heard the saying, don't talk about the labor, just bring me the baby. What that means is, dispense with everything else. Just tell me exactly what I know. And sometimes what we would do is just cut to the chase, deliver the bottom line, help the doctor understand what it was that he needed to know to help his patient. But sometimes you had to get down and you had to at least help the physician understand that you did have a background, you did have depth, and you were an expert in that area, and sometimes you'd, as they say, we'd have to go A to Z in telling him what it was. And usually that was reserved for lunch times and when there was an extended period of time. I was, through my experience in a career in the pharmaceutical industry, I developed some friends. I had one of my friends actually belonged to the golf course where I belonged. His name is Bob Johnson, a very good, very smart internal medicine doctor. Some of you may have seen him through the years. I don't know, but he's now retired. But great guy, very, very intelligent individual. And I met another individual who was an anesthesiologist that James got to know pretty well because we both played some golf with him, Dr. Brown. And one day we were hitting our balls off the 10th tee, and Mac, the anesthesiologist, asked Bob, the internal medicine guy, something. And it just happened to be an area in which I had a little bit of expertise. And so I piped in and I, you know, went into great detail as we're walking about 100 yards. And Mac looked at Bob, the anesthesiologist looked at the internal medicine doctor, and he says, "What did he say?" And Bob says, "I have no idea." And at that point, I kind of mock blew up. I said, "You know, that's why I haven't been able to sell any of this stuff. You guys never listen to us." And Bob looked at me, says, "We listen. We just don't understand." And he was playing with me. But what I'm going to explain, first of all, is the technical aspect. And this is something that you should have some mastery over. It's a little bit complex, but you want to understand the nuance. And sometimes it may take years to really understand some of the nuance of the technical side of counting and dating. And, you know, I know the old saying, "Don't tell me about the labor, just bring me the baby. Okay, just tell me what to do," and that's fine. But at some level, you do need to have a little bit more information and depth. And it's good for you as a Christian to do that. So you may have noticed that this year, the timing of the Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread was a little bit unusual, right? Did you notice that? You may have noticed that because it's one of the things that we came up against when we were considering, okay, should we do our normal kind of congregational group night to be much observed, which we didn't this year, obviously, because everything was jammed so tightly. You had Passover on Friday night. Then you had the weekly Sabbath. Then you had the first day of unleavened bread on the first day of the week, the Sunday. And that's how it went. You know, normally it doesn't occur like that. Usually you'll have the Passover and the first day of unleavened bread that will fall before a weekly Sabbath, right? Does everybody get that? You know that this was a kind of an unusual year, but the timing and how the days of the week lined up with the two holy days, it doesn't happen that often. It did happen in 2001, I think, and in 2005. It may have happened another time as well. But that's the way it happened this year. So it doesn't happen often, but it does happen occasionally throughout the years. So we had nonstop services beginning with the observance of the Passover on a Friday night, the beginning of the Sabbath. And then we had our normal Sabbath service the next morning, as we do here at 11 o'clock. And then we had the first day of unleavened bread on Sunday. That's how it worked on the calendar. The last day of unleavened bread ended with a Sabbath day. You know, because 7 days later, 7 days of unleavened bread. And that was the end of the spring holy day season. It was a double Sabbath. Last Sabbath, it was the weekly Sabbath, and it was a holy day. So you're with me so far, right? Not too technical. You're with me. You're tracking. Little nod of the head. Then, just like we ask for the doctors, okay, we look for reassurance that they're actually listening and they have eyes haven't glazed over with all the detail. So again, usually the first day of unleavened bread begins before a weekly Sabbath. But why was it unusual, and why am I addressing this technical matter? Turn to Leviticus chapter 23. Because it has some importance when we're thinking about the timing of the day of Pentecost, which is going to be the next time that we assemble together for a holy day. You know this already, that we are told to count 50 days. That's the one holy day that we must count, and we need to count it accurately to end up on the day of Pentecost. And without going through the whole history of the Church of God through the ages, some of you remember that we began the counting because of an incorrect understanding or a translation error in the part of the King James English and everything. We began counting on a Sunday, and we began counting the day after Sunday, and we'd end up with a Pentecost on a Monday. And those of you who have been around for a while know that that was changed in 1974. But notice in Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 15, it says, "And you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath." When they had this new translation come out in 1982, I believe it was, the New King James, they correctly translated this "from," and it changed from the 1611 or the King James English. But "from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, seven Sabbaths shall be completed. Count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath, then you shall offer a new grain offering to the Lord." So that instruction is pretty clear, and it tells us to count 50 days from the day after the Sabbath. That would be Sunday, that falls usually during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Normally it does. And normally it's a little bit easier to arrive at that 50th day for Pentecost. But do you begin to see the issue for this year, and then also in 2005, and then also in 2001? Because for us to keep the day of Pentecost 50 days later, we need to begin counting on the correct Sabbath day during the days of unleavened bread. But there is no Sabbath day that fell in the middle of the days of unleavened bread this year. It fell on the day just before the beginning of the days of unleavened bread. And then the next holy day was outside. So it's just, it was just, the next holy day was the weekly Sabbath, and then the Sunday after was outside of that period in which you could count. So again, it does get a little bit technical. So why this is important is that there was an important ceremony that took place during this time of the days of unleavened bread. And we find that ceremony mentioned in verse 10. So just back up a little bit into Leviticus 23 and verse 10. "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them," and this is within the context, if you go back, the first things that are mentioned in the chapter are the Passover and the Feast of the Lord. Verse 6, "The 15th day of the same month, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, 7 days. And within the context of all of that, this instruction is given in verse 10. "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give to you and reap its harvest, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. And he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted on your behalf. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it." On the day after the Sabbath. "And you shall offer on that day, when you wave the sheaf, a male lamb of the first year without blemish as a burnt offering to the Lord. Its grain offering shall be 2/10 of an ephah," etc., etc. Then it goes on to say, You shall eat neither bread nor parched grain nor fresh grain until the same day that you brought an offering to your God. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings. Now, a few times in recent history, we've had the days of the week fall just as they did in 31 AD. In 31 AD, the Passover daytime portion when Jesus was crucified was a Wednesday. They began, the Passover that evening began on what we would call a Tuesday evening. I suppose back in those days, they would call that the beginning of the week. They wouldn't call it Wednesday because that's named after a Norse god, but the third day of the week. So at any rate, that day began at sundown. They kept the Passover. Jesus instituted his new symbols during that particular period of time. In that year, there was a weekly Sabbath, and that's when the wave sheaf would have been harvested and then presented later the next day as an offering to God. So Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 10 through 14, we've read that. That wave sheaf would be offered and accepted by God. The wave sheaf was an offering taken from the spring crop, and they had to take that offering before the harvesting in the land could begin. And it was offered on the same day from which Pentecost was to be counted. So on what date do we use in the year 2021? Which Sabbath do we count from? When the holy days fall the same way, with the same as they did this past, well, last week. Well, thankfully for all of this, there is a biblical example. God provides an out for us so that we can know which day that we are to begin to count for the important day of Pentecost. Since there was a Passover on a Friday evening, and then there's a weekly Sabbath, but there's no Sabbath in between, it kind of presents a little bit of a conundrum, a mystery. What do you do? When do you start the counting? If you'll turn to the book of Joshua, there is a biblical example. Again, this is down in the weeds. This is technical. This is something that most of the time you don't have to really worry about. You don't have to really be too concerned about. But when the week falls in this particular way, then you have to be aware that there is a biblical example that helps us to understand when the rule would be that they did. In Joshua chapter 5, they were just about to enter into the land. They are just entering into the land. And in Joshua chapter 5 and verse 11, it says, and you read earlier in the chapter and you'll find that they kept the Passover. It says, and they did eat of the old corn of the land on the morrow after the Passover. In that year, believe it or not, the Passover fell on the same day of the week, the weekly Sabbath, as it did this past year, beginning with Friday night. Friday night sundown, Passover began. And in this particular year, we can see that it happened in the same exact way. They did eat of the old corn of the land on the morrow after the Passover, unleavened cakes, and parched corn in the self same day. Now, according to the instruction given in Leviticus, they were not able to do that until that wave sheaf was offered. So, verse 12, and the manna ceased on the morrow after they had eaten of the old corn of the land. Neither had the children of Israel manna any more, but they did eat of the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. That particular year was just like this year. So that counting began on the next day after the weekly Sabbath, even though that was also the first day of unleavened bread. The only way for the scene described in Joshua 5 to happen, how that could take place, was if the wave sheaf was offered on the first holy day of unleavened bread, which would be a Sunday, allowing the Israelites to begin eating their spring crop immediately, the first time that they entered into the land. It also meant that Pentecost fell 7 weeks from that day. So this year, we began counting to the day of Pentecost on the Sabbath day prior to the first day of unleavened bread, as we have in several other years. Thus, the observance of Pentecost is on May 16th and not May 23rd, because the counting of 50 would have, if we were to observe it on the 23rd, it would have been outside the days of unleavened bread, because the last holy day of the days of unleavened bread this year was a weekly Sabbath as well. It's technical, probably somewhat boring. and you probably are lost somewhere between Leviticus and Joshua. But at any rate, that's the reason. Now, do you count actually Pentecost? Do you count it out? Yeah, I do. Here's how I count it out. I got this little calendar from the home office. This is how I count it out, you know. And I'm kind of trusting in that it works. Of course, I was trusting 1972 and 1973 when I was first a member, and we were keeping it on Monday, too. We kept it wrong then. We keep it on Sunday. The day of Pentecost happens on a Sunday. So this is my go-to, and if somehow or another I've lost that, here's my fallback. I have to put some reading glasses on it to read it, but this is what the ambassador students sell, you know, every year, a little fundraiser. And so clearly, I can barely read it, but Sunday the 16th of May is Pentecost. So, yeah, yes, am I lazy? Most of us are. You know, some people do. Some people take great delight in being able to count that out. But we have to have a little bit of faith that we have been doing this the right way for so many years. But we do have to count. In this particular instance, it's a little unusual. So let's move on to the physical aspect. The physical aspect of first fruits. We are physical, material beings which are bound by time and space. In fact, it's kind of hard to imagine life without time. We're bound up in it. Time is everything to us. We're running late, we're running early, we're on the clock, 21 minutes in, you know, I'm trying to do better, trying not to go so long, but sometimes it's hard. I get distracted easily by myself. But we're physical human beings, and we are given instructions like those that I've just gone through, which require us to do physical things. And we carry out physical instructions, and obviously by this time, most of you know that those physical instructions have spiritual applications for all of us. Unleavened bread. We just finished eating unleavened bread 7 days. And I've mentioned that I think that it's important. It's really important to eat unleavened bread all during those 7 days because it is a physical reminder. And that's kind of what the Bible says. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. I don't know how it could be more clear than that. Maybe it could be. Again, I caution you, like I've had to caution myself, like Mr. Walden cautioned us, sometimes we slip up. Sometimes you might accidentally have eaten leaven during days of unleavened bread. Any smiles out there? Anybody want to talk about it later? No, you don't. We can talk about it later on. Maybe 20 years later, I was, you know, able to talk about one of my faux pas about 20 years later. I don't want to talk about that right now. It's too close. It's too recent, you know. But later on, we can see that, okay, we are human. We are physical. We do make some mistakes. You may have forgotten. You may have forgotten. Some people told me they forgot. Oh, I forgot. Forgot to eat unleavened bread that day. Okay, it's a physical thing. You're not going to burn in Gehenna for missing a day of eating unleavened bread, but it's the principle that is important. Leaven and unleaven are types, right? What did we learn? That leaven is a type of sin, unleaven is a type of righteousness. We're to understand those types because they teach us lessons. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. As physical beings, lessons, physical things are very important because they impart to us some understanding. And it's like the old saying, we learn by doing. By doing. My dad was a great fix-it guy. He could fix a lot of things. I think I've mentioned this before. He was of the mindset, he always preached to us, if you want something done right, do it yourself. And that became ingrained in us as kids. The alternative to that is that because my dad said that, if you want things done right, do it yourself, when it came to instructing us boys about how to fix something, he believed so much in the mantra of doing things yourself that sometimes he, yeah, not always, but sometimes he didn't include us in the fixing of things. And because of that, I was really bad with my boys about actually teaching them because it was so ingrained. Sorry, guys, my bad. I apologize publicly, but because we are taught that you learn by doing, and that if you want to do something, you want something done right, do it yourself. Sometimes dad and me didn't include our boys. You know, sometimes it was just a matter, guys, sometimes it was a matter, I just didn't know how. Okay, so that's, if you, you know that. Okay, you get it. Thankfully, both of them married wives who are used to doing things. And so they don't need to do it either. And my daughter has married the grandest of fix-it type people. He can fix anything. And so she's set. So at least you're okay. But we learn by doing. We learn by example. We learn by physical types. And that lesson is brought out in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Verse 1, moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. A physical nation, Paul is saying, was exposed to spiritual ideas through physical lessons. Now, you understand that now after thousands of years. They went through the Red Sea as a form of baptism. That water covered them. Did they repent beforehand? No. Did they really understand this? No. But it was mentioned, Paul says, for our benefit. We'll get to that in just a minute. They ate manna, which is physical, but it was called a spiritual food because it was miraculous and it appeared on the ground and they were to gather it for 6 days. They drank water when there was none, which had to be miraculously provided. Physical things have spiritual lessons that are meaningful to us, or they need to be meaningful to us. In verse 6, it says, now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted, and not to become idolaters as some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play, nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by the serpents, nor complain. They did physical things which broke God's law, broke a spiritual principle. They did evil things. They lusted. And that is something that occurs in the mind, right? They did, so it's an evil thing. And so we're taught that what they did was wrong. Their thought process was wrong. Now, they weren't being called, so we understand that. And in Romans, Paul goes on to say that all Israel shall be saved. So good news. But they did things in the mind and did things physically. They lusted, they were sexually immoral, they tempted God by doubting him. And you can look this up as they cried out for water and they were angry at Moses after everything that had happened. And that was their tempting of God. And finally, God provided water. These are sins that it's easy to sit back and spot with ancient Israel. Oh, those lame brains, physical people. How could they have done that? We can see the sin easily within ancient Israel, right? It's so simple. Yeah, it's in black and white. You can see it happening. And I know that the key here is spotting these attributes within ourselves, understanding that the lesson, wait a minute, the lesson's not now for 1,000 years before all this happened. The lesson is now for us. So I know that we all benefited from the understanding of physical things that we did, beginning with Passover. Foot washing, symbols of the bread and the wine, the unleavened bread and the wine. The symbol of leaven and unleavened bread throughout the 7 days of unleavened bread. The 7 days and what it pictures and the counting. And all of those are physical things that we do. But in doing, it isn't just a matter of, you know, one time you do it, been there, done that, got the t-shirt and hat. You know, it's a matter of going on. And I would hope that through the doing of these last days of unleavened bread and the Passover, I would hope that your understanding of what you're all about and what God is doing with you has only been heightened. Notice 2 Peter chapter 3. 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 17. We read in 2 Peter 3:17, "You therefore, beloved, since you know this beforehand, beware lest you also fall from your own steadfastness, being led away with the error of the wicked, but grow in the grace and the knowledge of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ." As you keep these physical things and understand these physical lessons and do these physical things because you're human beings that are constrained in time and space and you are subject to the physicality and the material, I think, in fact, I'm very confident that all of you learned greater and deeper lessons about yourself and your life and your dedication to God through the early part of the spring holy day season. I think the point is that you don't become a master of it just by a one-time application. But if you keep doing, and if this doesn't make sense right now to you, let me just say, stick with it. Keep doing, and you'll continue to grow in grace and knowledge. I'm very confident of that in every single person that is listening to this message. Now let's move on to what some would say, oh, this is the most eventful thing, the spiritual application of first fruits. And I would say that it's all spiritual, but I had to have three things to talk about, so I added this. No, just kidding. Let's go back, interestingly enough, to Leviticus once again in chapter 23. And this is a go-to chapter for understanding the holy days and practicing the holy days and living the holy days and being instructed about the holy days, because it's got all of them, including the Sabbath and the Passover, all in one package, all in one chapter. So it's a go-to chapter. In Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 6, it says, "And on the 15th day of the same month is the feast of unleavened bread to the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread." The instruction to me seems kind of plain. Some have kind of said, you know, hey, if you miss, well, you know, I say that too. But I see so many times that this is mentioned in the keeping of these days. You should eat unleavened bread. Because, again, these physical things teach us spiritual lessons. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. In the first day, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein. But you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord 7 days. In the seventh day is a holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, When you come into the land which I give to you, and you shall reap the harvest thereof, you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. And he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted for you. On the morrow, after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. Now this was barley. This sheaf of grain, how much was it? Well, according to the commentaries, it was about this much. Any of you ever done any canning? You know what these are? Quart jars. So this was apparently the amount of grain that was waived to be accepted by God. And the spiritual counterpart for that is given to us and told us by the Apostle John. Turn to John 20. And verse 16. Jesus was resurrected. He was in the grave 3 days and three nights, 72-hour period. I kind of think that it was probably an exact 72 hours, but the Bible doesn't really stress that much. I think it was probably right there. So 3 days and three nights. So in John 20, in verse 16, we read, you know, the women had come to the, they had come to the grave early. They spotted it early. They were the first ones to see it. And Jesus said to her, Mary. She didn't recognize him earlier. But she turned and said to him, Rabboni, which is to say, teacher. And he cautioned her, Do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. Jesus was the wave sheaf offering. He was the fulfillment of that ancient type. But go to my brethren and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and to your Father, to my God and your God. So, in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 20, Paul alludes to this very ancient ceremony. We read it, we study it, we assimilate it. We don't do it today. It was an ancient thing that was done. We don't have to do it today, just like we don't have to kill a Passover lamb. It's like, well, because our Passover has been killed for us, our wave sheaf has been accepted for us. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 20, it says, But now Christ is risen from the dead and has become the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. In fulfilling the type, Jesus Christ, our Savior, paved the way for salvation for us, for all of mankind, for all who will ever live and all who have ever lived. He's the first fruits. And of course, the Feast of Pentecost is one that we'll learn as we go through these next 7 weeks or 6 weeks now remaining. We'll go through and we'll remember that we're a part of that first fruits as well. Turn to Colossians chapter 1. Colossians 1 and verse 15. And speaking of Christ, Paul writes, Colossians 1 and verse 15, who is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of every creature. For by him were all things created that are in heaven, that are on earth, visible and invisible, whether they're thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him. And he is before all things, and by him all things consist. I don't know if Paul had access to John's writings, probably not at this particular point, but this is the same theme that John covers in his first chapter of the Gospel of John. He was God, and he was also creator. In verse 17, and he is before all things, and by him all things consist. He is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he might have the preeminence. That's good. What does that have to do with you? That's really important. You know, your life, your physical matter sitting there in a physical chair is so important to God because you are a part of this type process as well. Your calling proves that. It really does. Let's go back to Leviticus chapter 23. And let's hone in on where you fit in all of this. Leviticus 23 and verse 16. We're picking up the thought and the continuation of what we had already looked at, but I'm breaking into the thought here, please excuse me. But in verse 16, and it's the counting aspect that we've already covered. Even to the morrow after the seventh Sabbath shall you number 50 days. And you shall offer a new meat offering to the Lord, and you shall bring out of your habitations 2 wave loaves of 2/10 deals. They shall be of fine flour. They shall be baked with leaven. They are the first fruits of the Lord. Now, this is loaves of bread, the kind that so many were excited last Saturday night to, maybe you went out to Albertsons, I don't know. I was driving back from El Paso, I don't know about you, but some people, okay, let's see. How many of you got pizza last Saturday night? Oh, you don't want to say, huh? You didn't do it? Nobody did. Oh, you did. Now, finally, all right. That's good. That's good. We had no opportunity. What we got? Maybe we got some English muffins the next day, right, or something for breakfast. I don't know. But that's okay. But leaven, verboten during the days of unleavened bread, not even to be seen in any of your quarters. But now, on a holy day, 2 loaves. These are loaves. They're not. These are loaves of leavened bread. What is leaven picture? There you go. There you go. You're getting a lesson. It pictures sin. These loaves have some leaven in them. And so we're not leaving the type of sin. We've come to see that these 2 loaves are representative of that church which Paul called the church in the wilderness. They had leaven. We can see that pretty easily after reading 1 Corinthians 10 and all the examples. But the others, 2 loaves, represents the New Testament church as well, which we've all admitted through going through our self-examination and keeping the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, that there is still leaven within us. We're trying hard to get rid of it. We're trying hard to exterminate it, put the old person away completely. But it is a process. In James chapter 1 and verse 18, James 1 and verse 18, it says, of his own will he begat us with the word of truth, that we should be kind of a first fruits of his creation. We're first fruits too. Our lives are based on all of this, our future, our trust, our understanding isn't just a belief and emotion. It's built on proof. So, brethren, I've found that most people are pretty content with an overview of what salvation means. We've gone through some technical things today, but in reality, it's good to have a little bit of the technical. It's good to have an understanding of the physical and spiritual types, and especially the spiritual application. And what it means to you is your entrance into the kingdom of God. It's so good to be back with you. We'll go through these next 6 weeks together, understanding the technical, the physical, and the spiritual. It's all spiritual, and it's an important part of building our faith.